Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One unique step for Telemundo is playing out on YouTube, an English language news magazine called Radar 2021. Host Gabriela Fesquez joins me next from Miami. How did Sesame Street make its mark on television? New docu-movie Street Gang will show how in theaters later this fall. We'll speak with producer Trevor Kraft next half hour. Also ahead, Amazon's October surprise, Barstool flings a linear net, and our new classic trivia master. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I'm presenting on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Verbal, Apple Podcasts, and now Reason FM. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 72 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Happy start of September and pre-Labor Day Friday to you. And welcome once again to the program all about TV's current and future. A pair of wonderful guests coming away in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. And again, we want to welcome those of you joining us, our newest podcast affiliate, Reason.fm. And if you want to participate, we'd love to have you be interactive with our guests. All it takes is a phone call and using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. You can also use our chat room to be involved. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you'll be with our guests. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in, stream, following the instructions, and other people can be live with you. And Gabriel Fresquez from Radar 2021 from Telemundo will join us live from Miami after these news notes. 1 month from now, you may be able to buy a smart television set designed and powered by Amazon. A Business Insider report issued this morning infers that Amazon will introduce one or more smart TV models in October. With Fire TV as the operating system and Alexa built in so people can control the set by voice or remote control. The sets will range from 55 to 75 inches in size and be put together by different manufacturers, including China's TCL. There is a possibility that Amazon may manufacture and distribute at least one set model on its own. Amazon has not confirmed or denied Business Insider's story at this hour. Barstool Sports is raising the curtain on a new linear network today, available initially on Sling TV. The channel will present a mix of video podcasts, original series, and blogs, featuring talent including Dave Portnoy, Casey Smith, and David Ortiz. Yes, Poppy Ortiz from the Boston Red Sox. Now some quickies. Fran Drescher, the former star of popular sitcom The Nanny on CBS, was elected president of SAG-AFTRA, that's the Screen Actors Guild, the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, who merged as one complete union a few years ago. Drescher received 52.5% of the vote cast by SAG-AFTRA membership. HBO Max will make a series pilot of Dead Boy Detectives. That's the DC Comics saga created by Neil Gaiman of Sandman fame. Film is expected to begin in November. And Hulu's new mystery comedy, Only Murders in the Building, is now the most watched comedy series debut on the service ever. The Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez co-starring spoof launched this past Tuesday. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from Miami, the host and overseer of Radar 2021, Telemundo's only English-language production, presented on YouTube Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Gabriela Fresquez. Gabriela, welcome in.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, Gabriela. So how did you get into what is certainly a very different thing for Telemundo, doing a program in English?
Well, it was an interesting journey. I was actually producing my own content independently on YouTube. I felt the need to connect with my roots and to really sort of challenge some of the negative portrayals that are out there about the Latinx community. And while that was happening and I was building that, the opportunity for Radar sort of came about, and they had a similar vision and idea in mind to do this show. So it ended up just being this really serendipitous natural fit where I had been producing my own content and then got an opportunity with Telemundo NBC Universal, and we launched a show in the middle of a pandemic.
How does Radar 2021 address the concerns you have about how Latinos are portrayed?
Well, one of the purposes of the show is really to highlight the bicultural, bilingual experience and really showcase the diversity of our community. So in doing that, we're able to do these really deep dives into all of the different issues that affect our community. I mean, if you turn on the news, and most of the time when you see Latinos in the news, it's around issues of, involving immigration, or, you know, there's a lot of, like, political vitriol going back and forth about, you know, for years it was about the border wall, right? But there are so many more issues affecting this giant community that we have. And Radar is an opportunity to talk about all of those things, whether we're talking about climate change or we're talking about Latinx entrepreneurship or the changing demographics throughout our country. You know, all of the issues that are universal in this country affect the Latinx community, and we have our own unique perspectives and voices that we want to showcase around topics that are really universal and for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did the program come about? I understand that it actually was originally a mini-series that was specifically on the presidential election campaign and the whole political scene last year. So how did it graduate from being a one-shot mini-series to becoming a regular series this year?
Well, I don't know if there was an actual ceremony. I don't know if there was a traditional graduation, per se. It really has just been an evolution that, yes, did come about in the midst of a very political, very politically contentious year, that was this idea to really highlight the issues that were important to Latinx communities revolving around the election. But the idea was always to extend beyond that and eventually really just open it up to everything that we want to talk about, political and non. I mean, this season we have a lot of exciting episodes coming up revolving around, I mean, we just did one on sex and sexuality and how it's something that's not really talked about within our communities. It's very taboo. We had a great episode on mental health that really tackled another taboo topic in Latinx communities. And we have one coming up on ancestral and indigenous spirituality. So, yes, I mean, in a sense, in terms of the topics that we cover, we sort of graduated from covering those political issues that are such hot-button issues to really expanding to all kinds of topics. But, yeah, it's just been a nice natural progression.
How open has Telemundo been in terms of giving you access to their news crews, to their reporters, their editors, and so forth to put Radar together?
Well, we have our own team at Radar, so we're small but mighty, and Telemundo's been really great about really giving us the creative control and power to create something totally new, because, I mean, the tagline on the show is Not Your Abuela's News Show. We really really try and stay true to that in terms of our tone and the type of topics that we cover. We try to always, you know, infuse a little bit of humor and a conversational tone in everything we do, because you can get news from any source, right? But at the end of the day, when you come to Radar, it's about sort of inviting people in and making the news accessible and contextualizing it. And Telemundo's really been good about just kind of letting us do our thing and have fun with it. And I think that's the most important thing. We're so bogged down by such heavy, awful news every single day. It can be really stressful and it can really turn people off. So I think Telemundo has played a great role just in terms of letting us have that freedom and that fun with how and what we cover.
Radar 2021 is Telemundo's weekly English language news magazine. It's on every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. It's available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices, among other platforms. And we're speaking with the host and overseer of the program, is Gabriela Fresquez. She joins us live from Miami, where Telemundo has its headquarters. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. Tom and I'm with you live from Nueva York, where it is now 72 degrees at the top of the hour. We're getting ready for what looks like a fantastic Labor Day weekend. We wish all of you out there a very, very good weekend wherever you are. And to all of our Jewish listeners, by the way, happy start of the High Holy Days. Jewish New Year takes place earlier than usual. It happens during Labor Day weekend. So congratulations on kicking off your new year, and thank you for joining us as well. If you have a question or comment for Gabriela, don't be shy. Ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Normally, we are on Mondays at this hour, but because of the Labor Day weekend, we want to give you that wonderful extra third day. So we'll be on Tuesday, 24 hours later, as well as Friday of next week. And coming up on Tuesday, we have a very interesting lead segment for you. Vice TV is launching what may be one of the most unique 9/11 20th anniversary specials around. It's called Too Soon, and it deals with how stand-up comedy and other forms of comedy have transformed after 9/11. We'll speak with the director of the program, Nick Scone, and he'll join us live. That's Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And be with us next Friday, because we got a really special hour for you. First up, First Media, the folks behind such services, Baby First and So Yummy, has a service that's out to be maybe the next DIY. It's called Blossom. We'll speak with Sharon Richter, the co-founder and president of First Media. And then a very special treat. Next Sunday, the History Channel is presenting a documentary about the Iranian hostage crisis of the 1970s and early 80s called Desert One, about the campaign by former President Jimmy Carter to get the hostages out that failed. My very special guest will be the producer-director of that special, the Oscar award-winning filmmaker, Barbara Koppel, who, of course, you may know for one of the two Oscars, the brilliant and groundbreaking Harlan County, USA, and 8 years ago did a special for Lifetime called Running from Crazy that was nominated the following year for a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Documentary Program. We had her on then dealing with Running from Crazy. That was about Mariel Hemingway's family and her deals with mental illness with her family and herself. Barbara Koppel will join us live next Friday as our second guest, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Gabriella, take us through how you make an episode of Radar 2021. How do you, how long in advance do you to put a subject together and explore it from different ways?
Well, it's a lot of fun because we have such a great team from, you know, representing all of these different Latin American countries, from Nicaragua to Mexico to El Salvador to Jamaica. So it's really great because when we sit down and have a pitch meeting, we have people with, you know, we're all bicultural. Most of us are fully bilingual. And we have all of these different mix of cultures just within our own team. So we all kind of come together. We all pitch ideas. And then our producers come together and they decide the slate for the season. And then from there, you know, the stories kind of like take on a life of their own. But it's a very collaborative process, and it's a lot of fun.
You mentioned a moment ago that you've already done some segments this year that deal with very tough subjects. How easy or tough is it to, when you tackle these subjects, to find people willing to talk on camera about them?
How can you repeat the question?
Yeah, when you deal with some of the tough topics you were just talking about, how easy or tough is it to find subjects who are willing on camera to talk about how they've dealt with these topics, dealt with these issues in their lives?
Oh, that's a – I mean, it really depends on the topic, but, you know, it varies. It varies to every episode. Because there is definitely, I found, a lot of desire, especially from younger generations, to talk about some of these things. Of course, some of the more like controversial taboo things, like when we're talking about religion or mental health, I think for a lot of people, they're excited for an opportunity to finally have these realistic conversations, these very nuanced conversations about things that aren't widely covered. So for the most part, people are pretty accessible and pretty willing. But again, it's kind of a case by case. And sometimes we're looking for something like really obscure, like I'm looking for an expert on indigenous ancestral religions revolving around the persecution of women who practiced brujería in the 16th century. So in that case, maybe a little more difficult. But for the most part, I've found that people have been really willing and open because there is such a need and a desire for this content. And so people are kind of ready to jump on board and be a part of it, which has been really exciting.
Daniela Varenga is in our chat room, and she has a question. And by the way, she's not the only one to raise this. I've wanted to raise this also, too, and it's this. Why on your series do you use the term Latinx to describe your audience rather than Latino or Hispanic? And this is, as I said, something that Daniela is not alone in raising as a question.
Absolutely, and I do read the comments. But it's very simple, Simon. Latinx is a gender-neutral, all-inclusive term. And at Radar, like, one of our main goals in the creation, like the fundamental parts of creating this show, was to really create an inclusive environment for our audience. And let's be realistic about it. Not everybody uses the term. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody identifies with it. But when we're talking about a Gen Z and younger millennial audience, those are the generations that are coming up and embracing the term. So if you, you know, if you take a Pew Research study that surveys a large swath of Latino population, majority is probably not going to be on board with it. But Radar is what's next. Radar is the future. Radar is ushering in a new generation. And it's going to be a bumpy ride, and it's going to make some people uncomfortable sometimes. But I think if we're staying true to the ideals of the show and what we're really trying to do in terms of moving the conversation forward, I think it's important to use that word, and I think it's important to embrace it. Personally, I use Latina, Latino, Chicana. I'm comfortable with all of them. But, you know, I have many LGBTQ members in my family, and that's just the reality that we live in, is that our vocabulary, our language, and how we self-identify is constantly evolving. But I think people should identify, you know, people should use the term that they feel most comfortable with, but that's why we choose to use it on Radar.
Daniela, thank you very much for the question in the chat room. We really appreciate it. So far with the segments this year, what has gotten the most feedback to you and your audience?
Well, there was a lot of really positive feedback with our mental health episode. I think it really touched a chord for people, especially in the wake of the pandemic. I mean, we've all been kind of, you know, on our own journeys with our mental health and just dealing with the past year's events on so many different levels. So there was a lot of positive feedback with that, and it seems like there's a lot of desire to have conversations around it, because I don't know about you, but I grew up in a family where we didn't talk about our feelings. We suppressed that shit, and therapy was a white person thing. It was something for privileged people that was inaccessible and just not something that was talked about or used or acknowledged as pertinent to our everyday lives. So... And not to say that traditional therapy is for everybody, but I think being mindful about our mental selves, about our spiritual selves, about, you know, our emotional selves is something that I think younger generations, once again, are really embracing in terms of, you know, making it something that we can talk about and not stigmatize as it has been, and especially, like, you know, coming from the cultural aspect of the Latinx community. You know, we haven't always been so comfortable when it comes to talking about our feelings.
Incidentally, have you done a segment yet, or will you be doing a segment about the situation with Latinos and the COVID or the coronavirus vaccine, and why there still seems to be a lot of hesitancy within the community about taking the vaccine, or at least being understood about why they're not?
So we did do an episode called Vaxxed, and we did talk about vaccine hesitancy, especially within the Latinx community, because it is such an important topic. There have been so much misinformation, and then you add a language barrier to that. You add cultural differences to that. You add a lack of accessibility within certain communities. It has been a major issue. And so we did dedicate an entire episode to talking about that. It was extremely important, and we're still battling it today with the Delta variant, and you just really can't get away from talking about it. It's just something that has been really tricky to navigate within our communities. So we hope we did a good job in being as thorough as we could in terms of all of the reasons that people are hesitant to get the vaccines, because it is a very layered, complex subject, and that's why a show like this is such an incredible opportunity to take an issue like that and really break it down, humanize it, contextualize it, as opposed to shaming or judging people on the internet, you know, having real conversations with experts and really finding out what's really going on in communities and what's behind it. So definitely, if you haven't checked out that episode, watch it. It's on YouTube. It's called Vaxxed.
You're hearing Gabriela Fresquez. She is the host and overseer of Radar 2021, the Telemundo English language news magazine. It's on every Thursday at 5 p.m. on YouTube, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we have a few more minutes with her. She's live with us from Miami this half hour on Smart TV Televised. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 2 weeks from today on Smart TV Televised, my lead guest will be the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment, Ann Del Castillo. We had her on about a year ago, and she has done some really big wonders, in spite of the coronavirus pandemic, to get TV production back in blooming in New York in a very big way. We'll ask her what the latest is on that situation, plus whether or not we can get a New York Television Festival back, and about new facilities that will try to expand TV production and diversity in New York City and vicinity even more. That's Ann Del Castillo, the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office on Need Entertainment, 2 weeks from today, live exclusive here on Tomorrow We Told Lies. What are some of the more fun segments or pop culture segments you've done on Radar so far?
Well, we did have a great episode on media representation. So we interviewed a plethora of wonderful Latinx artists, actors, musicians who, you know, do just such a great job of creating content and representing our community out there. There's been such a wealth of talent that is getting to be seen now that, you know, networks are really making an effort to highlight diverse performers. And so we dedicate an entire episode to kind of dissecting what's going on with representation and how we're evolving or how we're not evolving fast enough. But that was a really fun one to just really showcase all of the talent that's out there right now.
We just had Ilana Pena a few weeks ago, the producer and the creator of Diary of a Future President, that's Disney Plus's popular series that just went into a second season a few weeks ago. And we also had recently Liliana Diaz-Pribas from Warped Ducks, the first live science fiction series from several years ago. She and her partner are now trying to bring it back in multiple seasons. I'm curious what you think about the scene in terms of where Latinos or Latinas stand in terms of producing, creating television programs. It seems that more of them are launching production companies, more of them are getting deals with individual networks or studios to create more. What's your sense about the TV scene and the effort to expand diversity among the Latina side or Latino side of the ledger?
Well, my sense is that it's been a trend to hire diverse talent for a while now, right? We've seen that happening for the past decade or so. The trick is making sure that we're getting Latinx creators behind the camera in those producers' chairs, in those directors' chairs, and in the writers' room. And I think that's where the really great content comes alive, when you have those authentic voices behind the camera as well as in front of it. And the other thing is networks have to give shows with diverse casts, with diverse creators, a better opportunity at staying on the air. I mean, we've seen really great shows featuring all Latinx casts on streaming services like Netflix get pulled despite their popularity. But I think Netflix is pretty notorious for not releasing any numbers, so I can't comment on the reasons why. But it's been difficult to – or I think there's been a lack of actual shows getting the longevity that they deserve. There was also a great show called Be That on Stars, and I have to hand it to Tanya Saracho, the creator and showrunner, for really making a commitment to hiring all Latinx writers, and I believe many queer Latinx writers as well. And she was creating a show about queer Latinx women. Makes absolute sense. But that commitment to hiring female directors, writers, and really keeping that authentic voice throughout the creation and evolution of the show was really critical to its success. And I wish it had gone for more seasons, but it's just wonderful that it existed at all, because that type of content is stuff that I never had access to anything like that growing up. You know, we had Selena in the 90s, and then that was it. So it is really exciting to get more representation. I think we can do better, and I think that comes from hiring Latinxes behind the camera, for sure.
And we should point out that as the person mentioned, the head of creator of Vida is now working with Universal Content Productions on a Latinx content lab to do exactly that. Bring more Latinos and Latinas into the TV side of things, whether it is in gatekeeper roles, producing, directing, creating, et cetera, television shows. Other people have done it too. And I should point out Rosalind Sanchez is starring in the remake of Fantasy Island that started a few weeks ago on Fox, and other things in the works too. So it looks like things are popping. And also with Spanish language television too, we're now starting to see women launch networks, Latinos and Latinas launch networks. Canela Media, which is a Spanish language network, actually becoming a multi-channel service. It was founded by a woman, and much, much more to come, I think, on that score too. Gabrielle, before you go, what are some of the segments that we can look forward to in future episodes?
Well, we just had one launch this week that's all about sexuality and sexual wellness, and I think that's It's a timely topic given what's going on in Texas at the moment. We also have an episode coming up about sort of the reclamation of ancestral spirituality among millennials and Gen Z, which is really exciting. You know, your parents told you to never talk about politics and religion. That's all we talk about on Radar. And we also have an episode covering the changing Latino demographics throughout the United States. So the results of the census data are in, and we are the fastest growing population in the United States, all 62 million of us. And so we're looking now at all of the emerging populations throughout the United States in places that you would not expect us to be. So I think that's going to be an illuminating episode, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I do want to point out for Netflix, I should point out that there's a second season of Gentrify coming up, which was a critically acclaimed show they launched a year or two ago. And they've got a number of other Latino projects, too, in the works. So just make sure that they get that. And also we're responsible for a great show called On My Block, which had a lot of Latino talent in front of behind the camera. And Mr. Iglesias Gabriel Iglesias, one of my favorite comedians, which was on for two seasons. Live-action, multi-camera comedy. So it is amazing. The program is Radar 2021. You can catch it every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And it's on YouTube, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And if you want more details about the program, you can go two places, Telemundo's website, telemundo.com, and YouTube at youtube.com. Radar 2021, Thursdays, 5 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube. Gabrielle Fresquez, thank you so much for joining us. A delight having you with us. Congratulations on getting your program off the ground. Hopefully many, many more episodes to come. And I hope you have a fantastic buena of a Liberty weekend.
Thank you so much, Simon. And I got to say, I need to hire you one day to leave my voicemail message for me because you have an amazing voice.
Okay, we'll talk about that offline anytime you like.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome, Gabrielle. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, you too.
Gabrielle Fresquez, the host and overseer of Radar 2021, joining us live from Miami. More tomorrow, televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, do you want to, now that we're getting close, well, not that close, but getting into the home stretch of this year and 2022 is around the corner, do you want to break some habits, bad habits? You want to bring on some more good habits? Well, there's an audiobook out there for you. It's called Atomic Habits by James Clear, and it's all about strengthening and expanding how many good habits you have in your life and taking out those bad habits you have in your life, or keeping them under the radar screen, if you will. Well, you can get Atomic Habits right now when you go for a one-month trial of Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, our various podcast sites, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, a one-month trial, great health and wellness information while it's available, and super customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And remember, if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you are in super shape because you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including a great book from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio podcast series and productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one woman and one man shows. So how about making this weekend, Labor Day weekend, a great opportunity to discover how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know can hear the world. Makes a great gift for you this weekend, any time of the year. And it's not too early to talk about Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, all those wonderful holidays toward the end of 2021. So for all details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up our next half hour, our second classic trivia winner in a row and our third from beyond the United States. But first, how did Sesame Street get to be the incredible phenomenon it's turned out to be on television? We'll talk to the person behind a brand new movie coming to your local theater this fall about Sesame Street called Street Gang. Trevor Capps joins us from Connecticut after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Check the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com. Together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're a fan of classic radio from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, check out the Erie House, old-time radio. Great excerpts from shows like Inner Sanctum, Suspense, Escape, and more. It's the Erie House Old Time Radio program tonight 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Get your Labor Day weekend off to a very suspenseful start, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best Speed Chart 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this pre-Labor Day Friday 2021. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Weber, New York, 72 degrees top of the hour. Another great guest coming in the half hour ahead, so get that call in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up for the top of the hour, we have a brand new classic trivia winner for you. We'll give you the answer to the question and what that person received and where that person is from. I can tell you it's our latest winner from beyond the borders of the U.S. of A. Earlier this year, we showcased an ABC two-hour special about Sesame Street, celebrating more than 50 years of being the longest-running children's program in the history of this media. What it didn't do was showcase how the program got made and the key people behind its creation. That's what a new documentary movie coming out this fall will do. It's called Street Gang. And joining us live to talk about it from Connecticut, in an InterRadio exclusive, the producer of the film, Trevor Kraft. Trevor, thanks for coming aboard.
Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Trevor, how did you get involved in documenting how this incredible program came off?
Well, it was a number of years ago. I always joke we started this project in 1865, but this was a really a labor of love. I had read a book by Michael Davis called Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street, and I absolutely was enthralled by the book, and I think one of the things that surprised me so much about it was how much I didn't know about Sesame Street. I like to consider myself like a Sesame Street super fan. Grover and I share a birthday. I watched it as a kid. I know all the characters, but what I wasn't prepared for was just how much I didn't know about the origins of this now absolutely iconic show. So I reached out to Michael Davis, and we optioned the book, and that started the journey to producing this film.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest thing you want your audience to know about Sesame Street that they don't know right now?
Well, I think one of the things that we want the audience to better understand is how these visionary creators, Joan Ganz Cooney, who is the creator of the show, along with Lloyd Morissette, John Stone, who was the original director, person that has, you know, before our film really not been highlighted very much as the creator of the actual street itself. And of course, Jim Henson and Joe Raposo, who wrote the music. But we want really people to understand how this really visionary group of creators and along with actors and writers and educators, you know, they really boldly interpreted these incredibly epic changes in our society in 1969 and used the power of television to engage and entertain, you know, children in a way that had never been done before. It's very easy for us now to look at the children television landscape and put Sesame Street right along in that same category. But if you really look at it, there wouldn't be a children's television category in the way that we know it today without Sesame Street. So much of what they tried, and it sounds cliche, it had never been tried before, taking educational content and attaching that to and really Madison Avenue advertising techniques had never been tried before. And all of children's television today that's based on any kind of a curriculum is 100% reliant on Sesame Street. And this gang of creative rebels, they really wanted to, with intentionality, change the world. And I think that's the thing that's important for us to have everybody who sees it understand, is that, you know, with creativity and with love and with, you know, a real purpose, amazing things can happen.
Let's start with Joan Ganz Cooney, who I believe is still with us.
Absolutely.
What was the road like for her to get Sesame Street off the ground? And just to sort of give people a sense of the environment at the time, back in 1968-69, public television was known as National Educational Television. While they had affiliates, NET was not the kind of a service where everybody ran the show at the same time. That still is the case, by the way, for some public television. But it was a very different kind of environment. And I'm very curious in terms of getting the road. why Cooney decided to take the fork she did, which was to set up her own organization, the Children's Television Workshop, rather than have NET produce the series or Channel 13 here in New York, where the series is produced, to take on the ball.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Joan was a television producer, documentary television, for NET and WNET New York. And ultimately, she was at a dinner party with her friend, Lloyd Morissette, who was a psychologist. And Lloyd's daughter had been sort of staring at the test pattern of the television set before the programming had started. And she was absolutely transfixed by, you know, just a regular test. And she knew all the jingles on TV for all the ads and beer commercials and hot dog commercials and all these other things. And at this dinner party where Joan and Lloyd were together, you know, she said, Lloyd said to Joan, you know, I wonder if television can be used to teach young kids. And Joan's answer was, I have no idea, but I would love to find out. And that question was really the genesis of all of Sesame Street. So Lloyd was working at the Carnegie Institute and had hired Joan to do a feasibility study of would this kind of a concept work. She worked for 2 years on this, and they had focus groups, and they had a huge amount of people to come and to sort of test this idea out to see if it could work. And Joan was a fantastic fundraiser, and she and Lloyd, through government grants, through the Ford Foundation, through the Carnegie, were able to put together a budget at the time of $8 million, which was an absolutely huge budget. We have a line in our film that essentially it's about $56 million for the season. But Joan didn't have an easy road, even though she was the creator of this. It was a very unique time where our government was able to truly support public television and support this educational initiative of bringing education to children who were not at the same level due to racial and economic inequality. And Joan had a tough time because even another executive, female executive at the Ford Foundation, said, well, Joan can't run this corporation, the Children's Broadcast, you know, because she's a woman, even though it was her own idea. And Joan, being the incredibly powerful woman that she was, you know, she said, well, it's all in my head, so try to do it without me. And ultimately, that's what got her the job. But she was the right person for it, and it was her vision that really helped to bring the show to what it became.
Trevor Kraft is the producer of Street Gang. That's the Sesame Street documentary movie that is coming to a local theater near you this fall. And he's our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York, 72 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you with us on this pre-Labor Day Friday of 2021. If you have a question or comment for Trevor, don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Remember, our next episode is not Monday, as it usually would be, because of Labor Day weekend, but it's Tuesday. And my lead guest on Tuesday will be the director of the new Vice TV documentary special, Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11, Nick Scorma. So be sure to be with us. That's Nick Scorma from Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11, which premieres this Wednesday night, next Wednesday on Vice TV, available on cable and satellite. That's coming up Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And again, don't forget, a week from today, among our guests will be the two-time Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker, one of the greatest ever, Barbara Koppel. She's the producer director of the new History Channel special, Desert One, that premieres next Sunday, September 12th. Barbara Koppel with us live next Friday, exclusively right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Let's talk, Trevor, about the incredible cast of people that was put together off-camera to make Sesame Street run. And what's interesting to me is that many of them had different backgrounds in commercial television. Dave Kahn, who I think doesn't get a lot of credit in a lot of places, he's the former executive producer of Captain Kangaroo. He was the original executive producer of Sesame Street. You mentioned John Stone. I believe he did the CBS Children's Film Festival before he did this show. He's the producer-director and really, as you said, set the tone. Joe Raposo, who was a music director for a local show on WNEW-TV here in New York. This was his big national break, if you will. Jeffrey Moss, who also was involved with the music and lyrics of the original songs. Talk about how these people all came together, especially given their different commercial backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, Joan had has a great quote that I'm sort of paraphrasing. She said, you know, individually we were all great, but together we were a genius. And I think that's a really good way to put it, because exactly right. There's so much massive levels of talent that happened, but it was, as Nick Raposo says in our film, Son of Joe Raposo, you know, if it weren't for Joan and John and Jim and Joe Raposo all coming together at that moment, at that time, Sesame Street wouldn't be what it is. You know, it's interesting. Dave Connell, John Stone, they were connected through through Captain Kangaroo, and John was a writer of Captain Kangaroo, and he had a lot of great ideas that he pulled from that show. John Stone and Jim Henson worked together quite a lot before Sesame Street. There was actually a piece that they worked on with Joe Raposo, and it was Joe Raposo and John Stone that were pitching Jim Henson to do a piece called Hey Cinderella for CBS. Which was sort of a modern comedic take on the Cinderella story, and done with puppets and with live action. So you have all of these different people. Dave Connell, who was a true force in the beginning of the creation of the show, adding in Jeff Moss, adding in Joe Raposo, adding in people like Chris Cerf and Norman Stiles on the writing side and also on the music side as well. It's an alignment of stars. It's this amazing constellation that came together. And one of the things that I think Joan did so well was to make sure that she allowed that crew of people to do what they do best. And that can be a very tough thing to do, but it truly was an experiment in children's television. And even some of the first, a lot of the first scripts say experimental script for television. You know, they were really trying new things. They were trying different elements of what they could do. And, you know, obviously Jim Henson was very much in the advertising world at that period of time. You know, he was doing commercials for La Choy, and he was doing commercials for Wilson Meats. And, you know, he was the guy that utilized all of these very humorous styles to sell different products. Dave Connell essentially said, well, we're selling the alphabet, you know, instead of selling La Choy, food products. So there was a real alignment that all came together, for sure.
Yeah. That was one of the interesting things about Sesame Street, was that you had, you know, this episode brought you by the number 9 or the letter Z,
yeah,
or whatever. Two other things I think were very key to Sesame. One was the cast, which is one of the most diverse casts at that time. You had people like Bob McGrath, who was a singer on Sing Along with Mitch. You had Loretta Long, who had done Soul with Ellis Hayslip on public television. You had Will Lee, a great Broadway off-Broadway actor as Mr. Hoople.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had The Muppet, Carol Spinney, Frank Oz, et cetera. How did that happen, that cast, both at the beginning, Matt Robinson, I also want to point out, too, and not only the people at the beginning, but then Sonia Manzano and other people who came aboard as the seasons went on?
It's interesting, you know, so much of what you think about for Sesame Street and the show itself, you sort of, I always add on a kid's show, because some of the things they did were so groundbreaking, like having the first interracial cast on television, all living together on the same street, on a kid's show. You know, it's such a powerful thing because, and John Stone said it in a WNET interview that we actually have in the film. The reporter was asking him, this is a piece that was done between the first and second season, and the reporter asked him, can you comment on, you know, this interracial cast and, you know, all the different people that are living here? And John Stone said very quietly, you know, we really don't talk about it. We just show it. And I think that's very powerful because, you know, you did have people like Matt Robinson and Will Lee and all of the characters that were together. There were places that didn't want to show Sesame Street. Mississippi Public Broadcasting wouldn't show Sesame Street because of the interracial cast. And, you know, I was listening to your guest before, Gabriella, and, you know, this was totally groundbreaking to show positive role models of people of color to the demographic that would specifically be targeted. Sesame Street did a huge amount of community organizing in order to make sure that the content that they had, these people were representative of, you know, who they were trying to reach to get those children to understand this is the way the world can be. We can all be together. We can all live together. We can all learn together and support each other. And we can have lots of different feelings and emotions and but the fact that we could all do it together, that is a very powerful thing. And, you know, Sonia talks about in the film, we were lucky enough to get Sonia Manzano to be our in our film, the amazing Maria for so many years. You know, she didn't see anybody like her on television. Nobody was like her, except until Sesame Street, when she became that person. And there's an enormous power in that, and there's enormous potential for change in showing, you know, this diverse cast and these diverse voices.
And that was her national breakthrough, because many people from Broadway and off-Broadway may know her for being the original cast member of Godspell, the great off-Broadway and Broadway musical.
That's right.
Something else that I think made Sesame Street very special and still does is probably the only children's program to come up with an amazing array of songs that turned out to be really cultural songs. The title song, I Love Trash,
yeah.
People in Your Neighborhood, and of course, yep. Green. Who would have ever thought that song, which is sung by Kermit the Frog, would become a Frank Sinatra hit and would actually become a very, very special tune.
I mean, so much of those songs that you mentioned came from the mind and the heart and the soul of Joe Raposo. And I'm not afraid to say I 100% fell in love with Joe in producing this film and looking through all of the footage that we were able to find of him. We found some interviews that had never been seen before of Joe. We got to interview Nick Raposo in the film, his son. And, you know, he says it in one piece that actually is on the DVD outtakes, you know, that Sesame Street's a musical variety show. And they did 180 episodes a season. And as Nick says in this extra scene, you know, my father called it the sausage factory. You don't want to know how it's made, but it's going to be good at the end. And, you know, Joe had three pianos in his house. He had one in the kitchen and one in the living room and one in the hall, just so that he could, anywhere he was, if he had an idea for a song, he could play it. And Emilio Delgado, who played Luis in our film, also says that, you know, it was amazing the speed that he could work. You know, somebody would say, hey, I need an idea for dog paddling in the river for a live action piece. And 5 minutes later, he'd come back with the song. He was that level of musical genius. And he wasn't stylistically confined to one space. You know, he was truly a musical savant. He was teaching other kids how to play the violin, you know, when he was in his preteens. His father was a band leader, and music was his language, and he was the person that really gave the show its spirit in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, we learn through memory and we learn through hearing, you know, you always hear a song and you're transported to a certain point in time. And, you know, John Stone, having worked with Joe before, understood his level and, you know, said, we need a theme song and we need a march, you know, and it's something that brings you in and you never can forget that song. Everybody knows Sunny Days, and you're instantly transported to that part of your life when you watch that show. And it's so ridiculously iconic. And to your point about being green, you know, it means it's so many different layers. There's not a rhyme in the entire piece. It's really this beautiful freeform poem set to music. And, you know, to some people it's about a frog who's down in the dumps. And to some people, it's, you know, it's about race and it's about loving yourself and it's about finding yourself. And that's really powerful. And that's why it was done by so many different people. And, you know, Joe Raposo, after leaving Sesame Street, went on to work with Frank Sinatra and do his whole tour. And, I mean, just such an incredibly prolific artist. I would do another Joe Raposo documentary just if I could, just to spend more time there. He's so fantastic.
One other thing that I wanted to get into was the fact that one reason I think why Sesame Street was able to get a lift in that first year that really helped it the rest of the way was the fact that many commercial television stations ran the show as well as public television. Here in New York, WPX in New York ran the first season. It was 9 a.m. in the morning. I watched a number of episodes. They ran commercial-free, and I think some of the commercial stations should get credit for doing that. I think it really made a big difference in terms of giving people the appeal of the show.
Well, and there again, there's another groundbreaking element that Sesame Street did. You know, they had, out of that $8 million budget, you know, essentially $1 million of that was earmarked for promotion. And nobody promoted kids' shows back then. You know, I mean, they were all selling, you know, Tootsie Rolls and, you know, and other kids' products and candy and vitamins and all sorts of stuff. You know, so this was something that hadn't really – nobody had thought about advertising something, you know. And, yes, that definitely – having it on commercial stations in that first bit of time was important. But, you know, I think also equally as so, I had mentioned the community organizers, and Evelyn Davis was the lead community organizer for Sesame Workshop, then Children's Television Workshop. And, you know, they handed out flyers as to how to tune your rabbit ears because, you know, it was on UHF at the time. And, you know, for a lot of the public broadcast stations. That's also part of, you know, I think something that needs to be sort of mentioned here is that Sesame Street was really a unifier of public broadcast. You know, as you said right at the top of the show, you know, there was really no unification. Everybody, all these public stations were doing their own thing. But now that they had this content of Sesame Street that had to be unified, in a lot of ways, that really paved the way for there being a PBS and not just, you know, NET, but having something that was more unified where there was programming that occurred throughout. There's so, you know, again, if you had done one really great thing with Sesame Street as a show, it would have been a good show and it would have had a good run, you know, but you combine all of these amazingly groundbreaking things using a new television technology in UHF, putting, you know, education and entertainment content together, doing a huge PR and advertising push, doing community organizing, having an original cast that is, you know, the first time it's been seen on television, Muppets, you know, comedy, co-viewing, everything together. I mean, that's why it is not a show anymore. It is our culture.
How are you doing getting this into movie theaters, and when is the film going to come out?
So actually, it already came out. It came out in April and had a nice theatrical run. Right now, you can see it on pretty much every major streaming platform, iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Redbox. It's available for purchase or for rental. Also, Blu-ray's out with fantastic features. There's 6 deleted scenes, including Muppet outtakes, because who doesn't love Muppet outtakes? Because they are the funniest of all. But there are those segments that I mentioned also about Joe Raposo. There's 2 or 3 different music beats, one specifically about Sunny Days that really sort of goes into some of the you know, the origins of that specific song. You know, so there's lots of different ways that you can see it. And then later on this year, it will also be on HBO Max as well.
So again, if you want to catch Street Gang, there's all sorts of ways that you can do it. And it will be, as you just heard, running on HBO Max later this year. And when it does, we're going to be offering as a classic trivia prize a new book about the making of Street Gangs. It's got lots of photos, original extra material. And if you want the details about that and about the film and where you can see it, here's where you go online, streetgangmovie.com. That's streetgangmovie.com. I've seen a lot of clips from it. It's a marvelous film. And whether you're into Sesame Street or not, I think you'll be really, really moved by this incredible, incredible TV series and the impact it's had on all of society. And continues to, by the way, with new episodes on HBO and also reruns on public television. Once again, for all details about Street Gang, streetgangmovie.com. Trevor Kraft, thank you very much for making this movie. And thank you and your team for just a great, great job. I'm thrilled it's getting the success it's getting, and hopefully much, much more with the HBO Max premiere later this year.
Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. And if you're doing anything TV in the near future, we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care. Enjoy the weekend. Trevor Kraft, producer of Street Gang, joining us live from Connecticut. Now time for our classic trivia segment. And for the second week in a row, we have a winner. And it's our third winner from beyond the United States. Our winner is Akimele Samuel from Nigeria, Africa. Our first ever Africa winner in the years we've been doing a classic trivia contest. The question, which was in honor of Ed Asner, who passed away last weekend, was this. Name the 2011 HBO movie where Ed Asner starred as billionaire Warren Buffett. The answer was Too Big to Fail, based on the book by Squawk Box co-anchor Andrew Ross Sorkin. It came out in 2011 and it received 11 Primetime Emmy nominations, 3 Golden Globe nominations, and it won an acting award for one of its stars, Paul Giamatti. Once again, congratulations to Akimele Samuel from Nigeria, Africa, getting the answer correctly and first to do so. And because of that, we're going to get next week 2 Bloomberg notepads out your way. We'll have a new classic trivia question for you on Tuesday's episode. And if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win a prize. And in order to do it, when you hear the question and you get the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're emailing from. And if we don't get a winner by the end of Tuesday, we'll post the question tomorrow on Wednesday morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook on Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWET. Thank you both Gabriella and Trevor for being our guests today. Thank all of you for tuning in. Again, thank you to our new gang joining us on that wonderful social networking podcast site, Reason.fm. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our different podcast sites, including Reason.fm, as well as our ongoing website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. And remember, coming up on Tuesday on our program, we'll have Nick Stone. He is the director of the new Vice TV special, Too Soon, Comedy After 9/11. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter. However you communicate, we communicate back as soon as possible. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager with Jay Steinberg, head of content. Website service provided by PodSite, the new internet avenue for podcasts. For more details, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is Gintaras Vakris. Tomorrow we'll be televised birthday by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we'll be televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Labor Day weekend. Please say thoughts and prayers for all the people dealing with the remnants of Hurricane Ida and Henri all over the country. And also, please give some thoughts and prayers to the people who are still being left behind in Afghanistan. We'll be back on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, all our podcast sites, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check up on your medical history and records, get a second opinion if you need to, and then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.